Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. This is the Morning Coffee Notes podcast for May 15th, 2005. This podcast is also going to be broadcast on KYOU AM in San Francisco twice. First at midnight tonight, and then at noon tomorrow. Today being Sunday, and of course tomorrow being Monday. What am I saying, everybody? God help! It got me so nervous and so in my head that I've actually done 5 different takes on this podcast, and that's very unusual for me, even unprecedented. And I guess that tells you something about the broadcast medium. It's sort of has this ominous, sort of dreadful feel to it, and podcasting has. Well, the first podcast that I did, you listen to it, it's really awkward. You know, I get going, and then I say, oh, wow, haven't even explained what I'm doing here. And then I sort of very stiffly explain what I'm doing. And this feels like a loop back to that again. Even though, you know, the idea of podcasting over broadcast is not, you know, it's kind of interesting thing. It's and it is definitely new. You know, so what is a podcast? I mean, if you're listening to this on the radio, you know, one of the things I tried to figure out is how many people were going to actually just be sort of flipping the dial on the AM band at midnight and then at noon and happen to run into this and not know what a podcast is and not know what they're listening to. I decided there'll be enough people there that it probably is a good idea to say what a podcast is. And if you think about it, it's sort of like, well, if you know what a blog is a personally edited website that sort of changes every day, where people link to each other and they write their own opinions about things, their sort of interpretation of events. They're not mass media, although some people would disagree and say that they are. There really aren't any blogs that have more than, say, 100,000 readers on any given day, and that makes it the size of a small town newspaper. The biggest ones are the size of a small town newspaper, and many of those actually operate more like a newspaper than they do like a blog. You know, whenever there's multiple authors and there's an editorial process and a review process, it's really hard to say that that's a blog. The same way this, you know, and this podcasting differs from radio in that there really aren't very many, if any, restrictions on what you can say on a podcast. And there are many more podcasts than there are radio stations, just like there are many more blogs than there are newspapers or magazines. And, you know, by some estimates, there are like 20 million weblogs today. And that's up from basically zero in the mid-90s. So it's all come together quite quickly. Podcasts, you know, current conventional wisdom says that there are 5,000 podcasts. I actually think that there are more. I have a site called audio.weblogs.com, which basically tracks all the new podcasts as they come on. And the database there has quite a few more than 5,000 entries in it. Some of them, if not many of them, aren't actually podcasts. So there's no, one of these days, I hope to actually write a script that validates them and figures out which ones are real, which ones aren't, and then sort of keeps a running tally of how many there are. So what is a podcast? Well, podcast then, you know, is something small. It's something that has a few listeners. You know, I don't know, a lot of people download my podcast because it was one of the earliest ones. But how many people actually listen to it? Well, I get a lot more email from my weblog than I do from my podcast. And so that's sort of one rough measure of it. It's easier to read a blog than it is to listen to a podcast because a podcast is a serial thing. You know, you kind of listen from beginning to end, whereas you can sort of skim a blog, which one of the reasons why I like podcasts is that, you know, you can't skim them. Or if you can, it's really hard to do that, to know, well, you know, what you missed. Maybe you missed the thing that you really came for. So that makes it a smaller medium. They're just, you know, for every minute of a podcast, you need to have a minute to listen to it. So, you know, one of the slogans that I use for blogging, and it works equally well for podcasting, is come as you are, and we're just folks. And those sort of two things come together. Sort of like if you're having a party, you know, podcasting says basically anybody can podcast, and it should be easy to podcast. And I know a lot of people try to make it sound like it's complicated and it's hard. And I think they're oftentimes they're serving their own sort of interest in that they want to keep it kind of an exclusive thing. And that just isn't going to work. I mean, basically the best podcasts are the ones that are by people who have something interesting on their minds or something interesting to say, and that they sound real, that they you know, I don't really like things that sound too polished, because you know, it's like the more polished there is, I think the more somebody's hiding. You know, they don't want to show you their imperfections, but hey, you know, I know you have them. It's not news to me that that you're a human being, but when you try to make it sound inhuman, you're not actually fooling anybody. It still is human, but it's kind of hard to say what your humanity is and what your beliefs are and so forth. Which reminds me of a interesting little anecdote. One of the first places that you know, we podcasters like to podcast events. It's kind of nice to bring your laptop with you. Or I have a little PDA made by a company called Archos, ARCHOS, and it's a really nice little device. And one of the things that it can do is record an MP3. And so I bring it with me now. We're pretty much wherever I go, and so I can do a podcast pretty much anywhere. I did one in a restaurant a few days ago with an Iranian blogger whose name is Hodor. And it was so interesting that the TV crew came. This was at a blogging conference, and TV crew came in and they wanted to interview me. And I said, "Well, you're interrupting my podcast." And I don't think they understood that I was doing pretty much what they do. We weren't doing it with video; we were just doing it with audio. But it still was the same activity, but the recording equipment was like sitting on the table, kind of looking like a radio. And there was no like visible microphone. I wasn't on a headset. Yet the quality that came out of it was pretty much radio quality stuff. And you know, Hodor is a very interesting guy. So it was really an interesting story. Also, Brendan Greeley from RadioOpenSource.org was there as well, and you know, he joined in the conversation. And if you want to find any of my podcasts, by the way, here's a little plug for where you know, go for my site for where you go to that. It's www.morningcoffeenotes.com, MORNINGCOFFEENOTES.com. And you'll see that there's a little white on orange XML button there, sort of like a chiclet. And that's the sort of standard way that sites have to inform you that this is how you can subscribe to the site. And what you would do there is you'd add that URL to your iPod application, whether it be iPodder, iPodder X, Doppler, Blog Matrix. There's a whole host of them. We're also going to, there's a community site that I maintain called podcatch.com, PODCATCH.com. And you can go there for sort of the latest gossip and news on podcasts. And we're going to have a directory there of all the different tools you can use to access podcasts. So anyway, I was going to tell you a story before I interrupted myself about the Democratic National Convention. I was at a blog. I went to the DNC to cover it as a blogger. And they did something that was pretty interesting and kind of new, is they said in addition to professional reporters, that they would allow a certain number of amateurs to cover the Democratic convention. And I applied and was accepted, and I went to cover it. And they had a breakfast for us, and at the breakfast they had a speaker who was a guy who had been a reporter for many years at the Associated Press. And yeah, I'm gonna forget, God, I can't remember his name. It'll come to me, I'm sure. But So he's giving a talk, and as you know, about what it was like to cover the convention before when he was a reporter for AP, and what it's like to cover it as a blogger now. And of course, the room was filled with bloggers, and we wanted to find out, you know, like if he's a real blogger or not. And so David Weinberger, who has a blog called Joho, Joho, he asked him, "Well, who are you voting for president?" And the reporter said, "I can't tell you that because if I did, that would screw with my objectivity." And we sort of had a little disagreement with him about that and said, "Well, if you're a blogger, we need to know where you're coming from." And that's sort of a fundamental difference between reporting and blogging, and therefore between radio and podcasting, is that we want to know where you're coming from. And that way we feel we know how to interpret what you're saying. And this is a technique that we call triangulation. What it means is that if I know where you're coming from and I listen to your account of an event, and I listen to somebody else's report of the same event, and they tell me where they're coming from, whether they're Republican or Democrat, pro-life, pro-choice, whether they're black or white or male or female, or, you know, the theory of professional journalism is that none of that matters, and that you're going to get the same report from, you know, two different reporters, no matter what their background is. Now, if you say that to a reporter, they disagree. They say, "Well, you know, there's an art to what I do, and you know, you won't get the same report from two different reporters." And I say, "Well, why is that? If you put the same event in front of two objective reporters, why do you get a different report? What is it that accounts for that?" And I think that's kind of a contradiction, sort of, because I think the truth is they do color their own personal beliefs do color their reporting, and it's just strictly unavoidable. You know, to ask a reporter to report objectively would be like asking a fish to describe water. A fish can't describe water. A fish doesn't even know water exists. It's kind of like, you know, ask a human being to describe air. To us, air is just the environment. It's like that the air is nothing. But try taking a fish out of the water and putting him in the air and ask the fish to describe the air. The fish can tell you exactly what the air feels like because it's not the fish's natural environment. So a Republican is going to look at a set of events in a certain way and see them objectively differently from the way a Democrat would look at the same events, and again, feel that they're saying objectively what actually happened. So, which is why we need to get multiple points of view on things. And it's why the striving to provide one point of view, which actually in the end, the professional journalists have actually kind of succeeded at doing that. And it isn't so much the objectivity of journalism that accounts for that. It's the fact that they're serving the same sort of, they're competing for the same ad dollar, for the same sponsorships, you know, for they're trying to so hard to be the same that in some sense they do succeed. You know, give you a case in point, and CNN used to be sort of the shining light, I thought, of news coverage. I mean, it was a magnet. We used to go there. Like, for example, if you ask somebody today, or if you, I'm sorry, if you ask somebody in the early 90s, where do you go for your news? And their instant answer would be CNN. That would just be where people go for news. Especially in time of a crisis, like the Gulf War was the first Gulf War was a good example. I mean, basically everybody was glued to CNN then. And today is no longer true. And in fact, you know, one by one, the TV shows, the news shows on CNN have turned into basically into entertainment shows. They're generally one issue things, like Lou Dobbs, for example, practically fascist coverage of sort of a crisis that he's created, that in everyday life, it just really is hard to find that crisis. And so what's his motive and what's their thinking at CNN? You kind of have to shake their head that they call that journalism. Ugh, that's ridiculous. The same thing's true with Anderson Cooper, with Paul Azan, All the major, you get Larry King, they all have a point of view, and the point of view is remarkably narrow, and the kind of news stories that they actually will cover are also remarkably narrow. And there was one last bastion of news on CNN that was worth watching, and I would tune in every night to Aaron Brown's Newsnight, and they were trying to cover news, and they gave you some variety, and they gave you things to think about, which is kind of why I watch news, is to sort of set my agenda to give me things that I need to think about, that sort of, test my morals and my beliefs, and give me something to think about, basically. And in early May, on May 2nd, in fact, I remember the date because that was my birthday. On May 2nd, I was in New York and I was tuned in to Anderson Cooper, and the whole show was about this runaway bride, this woman who basically, somebody who lives in Georgia, and she was going to get married, and she sort of didn't show up at her own wedding, and that's not news, I'm afraid. I just don't, that happens every day, and it's not even. I mean, you just wonder how the hell do they justify it to themselves, and how does Aaron Brown sleep at night? Because Aaron Brown is a journalist, I thought, or so I thought, and I'd love to hear what Jeff Greenfield would have to say about this, and I imagine basically he stays there because he gets paid really well to stay there, but I think of him as a journalist, but I can't believe that he stays at CNN after they've completely trashed their whole, all their credibility is completely gone. But their production values are very high at CNN. In other words, you won't really hear too many, on-air mistakes. Their voices are very professional. Lou Dobbs knows exactly how to look into the camera. So does Anderson Cooper, while he's being a complete fucking jerk. They're gonna have to, oh, sorry, you're gonna have to bleep that one out. just an aside, I did so many takes on this to get started, and I think the problem was, I found myself talking about, well, how different is this from my normal podcast? And my challenge was to make it not different from my normal podcast, yet still try to say something relevant to a radio audience. And there I use the F word, and that sort of tells you that I have gotten out of my head, because normally if we went out to dinner and we were just talking, I probably would use that word in conversation when I felt, like embellishing something or making it more colorful. But you're not allowed to use that word on the radio, so and you're also, how many different masters are you serving when you talk on the radio? Think about it. There's the advertisers, right? There's the station management. There's the owners of the station, in this case, Infinity Broadcasting. There's the owners of the owners, which in this case is Viacom. So it's a conglomerate that owns many entertainment companies. There's the FCC that has a lot of say in what you can and can't say. And then there's the music industry. So, now they have been really good. I just want to say this. First of all, I'm not being paid to do this. This is a completely, and this will be distributed through my normal channels. And much the same way, by the way, I was a columnist at Wired magazine in the mid-90s. And I did it the same way. I mean, they did pay me, but it wasn't very much. And I insisted that I be able to distribute my written work on the web and through email before, when it was ready, basically, and that they could sort of pick whatever they wanted to out of that stream and run it in the magazine, and that it'd be kind of an independent process. And that was when it really worked, when it really was independent. But then, as they hired more people, and the editorial, my editors and the management at the magazine, at first were just wonderful. They were really great to work with, and they never interfered, really never interfered with what I wanted to say, and in fact encouraged me to be more original. But as the publication grew and became more important, and hired more people, it became more difficult to say, what I wanted to say, and I was seen more as a problem for them because, because I think they were misinterpreting things that I was saying, but because political correctness drives communication, and podcasting at its best really isn't very politically correct. Let me just be really straight about that. It also isn't really highly produced. So, I have what I think is a reasonably good radio voice. But I'd like to think that this would still work even if I didn't have sort of a really good voice or, sorry. See, that's not politically correct. You're not supposed to praise yourself, but frankly, I think I've got a good voice. So anyway, right. It's not about how good it is, how polished it is, how you're the best at what you do. That's really important. That's a really important point of podcasting. So if you're flipping through the channels here on the radio dial as you're driving around in San Francisco, and you happen to come across this, and maybe you find it intriguing. And if you do, why do you find it intriguing? And if you want to answer that question, you can send me an email at dave.winer, W-I-N-E-R, at gmail.com, or you could go to podcatch.com and post a comment there because I'll put a place for for people to comment on this. You may have to scroll down a little bit, but at midnight it will be the top item there. It may not be the top item at noon when this is played later, played the second time. But what was I going to say? Right, it may sound intriguing, and then again, it may sound like it doesn't belong on the radio. And I've had that kind of criticism. A columnist at news.com, Charles Cooper, wrote a piece. He wrote a piece after the Democratic convention, which I mentioned before that I covered it, along with, I guess it was about 20 other bloggers. I don't remember the exact number, but it was, more than a handful. And there was a lot of criticism of what we did. And, everybody has their own filters, and of course, I had mine too. And this is what my filters told me they were saying. Was you guys don't sound like Judy Woodruff or Wolf Blitzer or Ted Koppel or Dan Rather or any of those people. And, they said it a little bit more like the quality sucks or these people don't know what they're doing or they're only covering themselves or, they're not getting any news. And to which I say a lot of different things. It's like, well, first of all, it's a convention. So what happens at a convention? Everybody hangs out and schmoozes with the people that are just like them. That's what they do. So the conventioneers from Ohio hang out with other convention delegates from Ohio. Duh. You might think, well, this is their opportunity to hang out with people from California. But no, they hang out with the other delegates from Ohio because these are the people that they know. Reporters hang out with other reporters. We saw that happen all over the place. And, I made an effort to work out of the working press room, which I was allowed to do because I had a press pass. And I made a point one day to work out of the working press room so that I could find out what it felt like to be a member of the working press. And I sat next to people from, the Washington Post and the Salt Lake City newspaper, and AOL sent some people there who work on their website. They were there as well. And the room was filled. It was interesting. What was really interesting was to see how much what they do is exactly like what we do. I mean, they type stuff into web forms, they send emails out, they have little mini recording booths that they carry around with them, like us podcasters do. I was already podcasting by then. You can find some of those podcasts, by the way, at morningcoffeenotes.com. If you scroll down to the bottom, you'll see them there. I just had a sip of coffee. By the way, that's another thing about a podcast. You're allowed to drink coffee, and everybody has to wait for you. I may actually go fill my coffee cup up too without even hitting pause. And guess what? At the radio station, they won't even edit that out because that's part of the deal we have, basically. Anyway, where was I? Ding, 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 ding. Dave, Earth to Dave, Earth to Dave. What were we talking about? We were talking about the DNC and about getting around. And well, now would be a good time to go fill up my coffee cup then, wouldn't it? I guess I got distracted. I'll be right back. Yeah, I'm walking across the room now. And there we go. So the coffee pot right now. I wonder if you can hear that. Yep, now I'm going to open up the refrigerator. And I'm going to take out a little bit of half and half because I like to have my coffee with some cream in it. So, what's another sort of, I don't even remember where I was going. I remember that I went down to the broadcasters thing. Oh, right, yeah, now I remember. There we go. So the bloggers, right, we're covering the bloggers. That's what we were doing at the convention. Just like the Ohio delegates were hanging out with the Ohio delegates. We did get out. We did go to some parties. We did go to some breakfasts. We walked around places we were allowed to walk around. We even walked around some places we weren't allowed to walk around. We experienced the security, which was unbelievable. I mean, you know, it was really hot in Boston, so we told everybody how hot it was and how uncomfortable the whole climate was. We basically, what we did was we reported on what we saw, and that was the best we can do. That's all we can do. There's no magic. We're no better or no worse than the TV reporters are. They synthesize stories, but people sort of end up nodding off because their stories aren't very interesting, and that's just the way it is. What goes on at a convention isn't really all that incredibly newsworthy. It's a bunch of people going to a convention and hanging out with each other and doing what people do at a convention, and that's the story. And so we pretty much carried the story, and we took a lot of heat from people because we didn't have the polish. There was, you know, because we were bloggers, because we didn't understand how the convention worked, you know? I mean, that was really funny because I was there at the opening moment of the convention and I wrote into my blog, I forget exactly what it was, is like, this thing is unbelievably boring, you know, or I can't even make out what they're saying and there's nobody in the room. And that's not exactly true. The bloggers were there, but otherwise the place was kind of empty. You'd have these speakers would get up and they would talk to the room and they would say absolutely nothing, you know, the speakers. They were people you had never heard of and nobody was there. And you go, what the hell's going on here? It wasn't until later that I fully got it, that what happens is that while the floor opens at 4 p.m. and the speeches start at 4 p.m., that the convention doesn't get rolling until the TV cameras come on at prime time. And what people are doing at 4 p.m. is they're having their breakfast. Why? Because they stayed up till 4 a.m. last night, the night before. That the whole schedule of a convention is totally skewed towards night. And whether that's because TV is there or because it's always been that way, it's very different from a computer industry convention where, you know, you sort of burn the candles at both ends. I guess they do that too, but we were new to this, so we didn't know. You know, so you could take two different views of this. One is, you could really hate us for doing that and see an opportunity to kick us in the ass and say, well, these people aren't doing anything. And, you know, let's just like put them down for whatever reason. Because some people like to put people down, I guess. I don't know. Like Charles Cooper did. Charles said that basically this reporting sucks. There's a lot of hullabaloo about this. And they, in the end, they didn't do anything. But, you know, I beg to differ. I think we told you what we saw, and we couldn't have done anything more than that. We weren't trying to be supermen and superwomen. We were simply just trying to do what we do. That's it. We got our eyes, we got our ears, we've got our keypads, keyboards, and we've got our fingers, and we can write stuff and take some pictures and maybe do a podcast, and that's it. And you have to choose the people that you want to listen to. And one thing we can guarantee you, though, is that what you're hearing is what we see. Because we can't color it, because we don't have editors, and we don't have the RIAA to account to, and we're not owned by anybody, and they're not owned by anybody, and we're unregulated by the FCC. So add it all together, we do have our strings. I mean, you know, fact is that the podcasting world is becoming kind of cliquish, like the blogging world is cliquish, and I've never been one to sort of want to be too much part of those cliques. And that's why I sort of have a reputation of being a difficult person. And I kind of actually have come to like that reputation because It means that I'm not playing ball with anybody. I'm not playing footsie. You know, it doesn't mean I don't do business, and I do. And when I'm doing business, I do honor confidences. You've got to do that, okay? And but on the other hand, is I'm gonna say what I think, and if somebody is my friend, and I have to not say what I think if I want to maintain the friendship, then generally speaking, the friendship goes, and I do say what I think. Not enough though, and I want to do more of that because I've had situations happen where I had I won't say a friend. See, I don't want to do that. But I had an acquaintance say to me that he made a deal with somebody, and I'm not allowed to talk about this. I'm embargoed. Can't talk about it until a certain time, which is fine. I'm happy to take the embargo. But the person that he made a deal with is somebody that I had had a problem with, and I said, you know, in a way, I wish that I had written about that problem because you might have asked me about this deal before doing that, and maybe I could have saved you some grief, and maybe the world would have been a better place. So I very often will avoid the trouble and not say the thing that's perceived to be negative, you know. And I gotta stop doing that. I gotta do less of that. So anyway, so you know, we're trying to bring humanity into this, and it may not be a good match for broadcast radio for that reason, because traditionally broadcast radio has been polished more and more. I mean, I grew up listening to AM radio. I know when I was a kid, I'm 50 years old, exactly 50. It was 50 earlier this month on May 2nd, and which means I'm a baby boomer, and it means that I grew up in the time when centralized media was, you know, coming online in all of its glory. And when I was like 5 years old, my grandfather gave me a transistor radio, a handheld transistor radio, which was the miracle technology of the day. It was something that took a battery and you could fit it in your hand, and it had a little earplug you could stick in your ear, and you could listen to the radio. It was a personal radio that was portable. And up until that point, radios were not portable. And they didn't run on batteries, and they weren't cheap enough so that you could give one as a present to a child. And I used to listen to Cousin Brucie on WABC AM in New York. Cousin Brucie played the Beatles, and he played the Dave Clark Five and the Turtles, and Petula Clark. And then later, I don't know if he got into the Monkees, because I think then by that time, the next thing after that was WNEW with Jonathan Schwartz. Those were the hippie days, and later FM radio took over, and there was WBAI in New York, which was really cool, and sort of a hippie radio station in New York. And radio was a big deal. I grew up wanting to be a radio guy, and I never really was until I got a chance to podcast. I became a software guy, and I lived in Silicon Valley for 22 years, and you know, and now I'm sort of moving around. I'm kind of unstuck. I've lived in Seattle. I've lived in Boston. I'm now living in Florida. Maybe I'll come back to the Bay Area at some point. It certainly is interesting that the Bay Area is where this radio station is rooting itself. And I think it's kind of appropriate because the Bay Area has been host to so many cultural revolutions in the you know past you know whatever past century. You know, and there's so many interesting stories to tell that aren't being covered on mass media. And this is a mass medium, absolutely. Where podcasting is not mass medium, this is. You know, the whole challenge, of course, is to be able to transmit the very personal nature of podcasting through the mass medium. And if it's successful, and I kind of feel that it is going to be successful. I think San Francisco is a good place to do this. Partially because you know, although I have a lot of criticisms for Silicon Valley, I really think it's kind of become anti-intellectual and too focused on marketing and trying to be all these things that it really isn't. You know, Silicon Valley at its best should be focused on technology and users. And let media and commerce take care of itself. You know, media and commerce are headquartered in New York, not in the Bay Area. And I don't think they ever will be headquartered in the Bay Area. I think in the Bay Area wants to find its way, it will be about technology. It will be about the little ones and zeros and making them do their dance for the user's benefit. And a radio station that plays podcasts can actually be a very positive force for that. I think that if done right, it will put some pressure on KQED FM, the public radio station in San Francisco, which public radio has become more and more like commercial radio. It's been more produced, more homogenized, more politically correct, less informative. Yet it still is the best radio out there. Maybe this will be better. One of the things that I hope that they look into is IT Conversations, which is one of the very earliest channels for podcasting, run by a guy named Doug Kay. IT Conversations goes to computer industry conferences and they record speeches given by technology leaders. Doug also does interviews with people. He's, like, for example, done an interview with me. Lots of people that are active in the blogging world, in the technology world, and more. I hope more and more. He has one up there that I want to listen to. That's a speech given by Doug Engelbart, who is one of the heroes of the personal computer revolution. And he has actually it wasn't IT Conversations. It was Engadget. Engadget also has a podcast, and they recently did an interview with Bill Gates, and it was marvelous. And Bill Gates really does have something to say. And it'd been a really long time since I heard Bill Gates, and this was Bill Gates talking at length, without being interrupted, without being edited, and it was Bill Gates at his most sort of spunky. And Bill Gates can be pretty spunky. He's an intelligent guy. He's got a twinkle. He's got a tinkle. Twinkle. He's got a tinkle. Now, sorry there. He's got a twinkle in his eye when he's going. And it's been a long time since Bill Gates has had this kind of energy, and I really, 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 really enjoyed it. And so, what KYOU can do for its community, which I know very well, is that it can help put the focus back on the intellectual life of technology. There really is an intellectual side to technology. It isn't about dumbing down, which is another thing that they do in media. They tend to justify. Basically justify lying to their listeners and their readers by saying that, well, they wouldn't understand it if we told them the truth. Well, I beg to differ. They do understand when you're lying to them. And it's better to find a way to tell the truth and maybe confuse a few people. And then you do it again and more people will get tuned in. I think that you'll be surprised to find that when you start throwing out some real data and some real opinions from people who do things, not just people who talk about doing things or people who imitate people who do things, but the people who actually really do things. Put them on the air, okay? Give them some time to talk and let them be a little bit unpolished. Let them sort of work it out and figure out their voice, their public voice. Cut them so much slack that they're going to have, that they'll relax about it and they'll be able to say what they have to say and that we can all learn from them. And that's what I thirst for and that's what I'm searching for. I'm searching for signs of intelligence, signs of generosity, people who have something that they passionately want to say. And frankly, not only don't I care if it doesn't come off with the greatest polish, I'm suspicious if it is too polished. I think that if it's polished, that means there had to be a team involved, and that team has to be paid by somebody, and that the somebody who's paying them is owned by somebody, and they're responsible to some government agency, and they have advertisers and business models, and you name it, all the way up and down the line. There's just so many ways that then it gets sliced and diced. What I want to hear is I want to hear human communication with all of its frailty, with, subject to all kinds of criticism. And then I want to defend it. I want to say, now, wait a minute, stop criticizing that person. They're taking a risk and you're not. When you say that that they're not polished, that it's crap, what you're doing is not contributing anything. What you're doing is you're trying to subtract. And I don't like it when you do that. At least there's no harm in somebody saying something that is ineloquent. And maybe there's a great benefit if you actually do listen to what they have to say. Think about a child who comes home from school, kindergartner, comes home from school with a painting, a picture, or some kind of a drawing, or maybe a sculpture, and shows it to the parent or uncle or aunt or grandparent or just neighborhood friend and says, "Here, this is what I created today." And so what do you say to that child when they show you their piece of creativity? Well, you don't say, "Well, that's crap," or when you're asked about the whole kindergarten class, say, "Well, it's nothing but crap. It's not even worth looking at." You don't say that because you understand that there is something precious happening there. There is something that requires protection, and there's something beautiful there, that there's a little human being, a new person, who is trying to communicate something to you, to tell you a story, to tell you basically nothing more, maybe, than this is how the world looks from down here, from my eyes. And that's precious. And it's not just, shouldn't be something that is just reserved for children. It's something that we as adults have lost something when we forget that we are also creative beings capable of art and capable of moving each other and touching each other and really, experiencing our own and each other's humanity. And that, in a sense, maybe that is the only reason we're actually here. And that's what, when Marshall McLuhan says, this is what I think he means when he says, the medium is the message. That really, we are a communicating species. That's really what we do. And when the communication works, we're capable of miracles of generosity and creativity. And when communication stops working, we end up with global warming. And we have crazy wars that just don't make any sense. And we do things that long term probably aren't very smart things to do. And that my feeling, and got to know where I'm coming from. I'm a liberal, and I'm not ashamed of it. And when a conservative says you're a liberal, I go, "Yeah, and I'm a gun-toting liberal." And you better, I'm not one of these guys who shirks. I just, you come at me, I'm getting in your face. And, which is, I think, how the conservatives often win, is through intimidation. We're not going to stand up for what we believe in. But that's where I'm coming from, and that's what my filters say. But I think that if, and I've ha actually had this experience, and I'm about at the 40-minute point, which is where most podcasts seem to stop, and so I'm going to wind this down. But I had a wonderful experience at a conference at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University earlier this year. It was a conference on blogging, journalism, and credibility, and they had bloggers and journalists there, and they had some left-wing bloggers like myself, and they had some right-wing bloggers too. John Hinderaker from Powerline was there, and Powerline was the blog basically that outed Dan Rather and then stayed on the case. And eventually forced Rather out of his position as anchor at CBS News. And, he's a right-wing guy and I'm a left-wing guy. And you would think that, well, we wouldn't have a whole lot to agree on. But in fact, at a level that's much deeper than our personal politics, we agree at a very deep philosophical level about this whole idea of responsibility and democracy and communication and each of our obligations. We have an obligation to be active politically. Whether I agree with you or I don't agree with you, I insist not only do you have the right to do that, but I believe you have the obligation to share your political views, to listen to other political views, to try to convince people, and to let yourself be convinced. That this is the most important part of being an American. And whether you're Republican or conservative, or liberal or Democrat, I think that this was the amazing thing about this meeting, was that I found that we were basically brothers on this one, that we agree completely. And I think it's so much more important than the individual politics and who you voted for, and when if you were to ask me, who do I have more in common with? And then there's no question Dan Rather is a liberal. At least I don't think there's any question. I don't feel that there's any question. But if you ask me, who do I have more in common with, Dan Rather or John Hinderaker? I'd say John Hinderaker in a mile, by a mile. No question about it. So is there something profound, something important going on here where it leads you to a statement like that? No question that there's something important going on here. There's something going on politically and intellectually, and I think that culturally and technologically as well. So I'm going to leave it on that note. I'm honored by I'm honored to be allowed to be the first broadcast podcaster in the United States, and I encourage you to come by any one of my different sites. Whether it be scripting.com, which is my blog, or morningcoffeenotes.com, which is my podcast, or podcatch.com, which is the community site for podcasting. So, anyway, that's Morning Coffee Notes for the 15th of May, 2005. This is Dave Weiner. I hope you all are doing great, and have a great day, and I'll see you real soon. Okay, bye.